Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Foot Traffic. I am interviewing Emma Isaacs today. Emma is the author of a book called Winging It. I recommend this read. This is a great book. It is loaded. It's jam-packed. What's refreshing is Emma is a real business owner. How many times do we have business coaches, consultants that have just never had a business before? Emma is not that girl. She's actually the founder and global CEO of Business Chicks, a business owner by the age of 18, property investor by 19, millionaire by age 23. This woman is so well connected. When you go and you open this book and you see the people leaving her reviews and testimonials of her book, people like Kate Hudson, Arianna Huffington, some really amazing, credible names. And I want you to understand why these people love her so much, how she's gotten people like Sarah Jessica Parker to speak at her events before and things like that. So if you are ready, let's dive in. And I want you to get to know Emma Isaacs so well, and then go grab her book, Winging It. You're going to love it. Growing your business doesn't have to be difficult. It's all about mastering a few key techniques, systems, and mindset. Welcome to Foot Traffic. With over a million downloads, it's the go-to marketing podcast dedicated to helping you grow your small business. I'm your host, Stacey Tuschel. I've been an entrepreneur for over 15 years, and I own multiple seven-figure businesses. Together, you and I are going to get you more customers in the door, more profit in your pocket, and more happiness in your home. Let's transform your business starting right now. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Foot Traffic. I am so excited to interview Emma Isaacs today. Emma is the author of Winging It, and it's a great book and a must read. So we're going to dive into Winging It today. Emma, welcome to the show.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you. So can you very quickly just kind of explain your entrepreneurial journey? What does that look like for you? How did you get started? And then we'll dive into the book.
Yeah, for sure. So I suppose I'm what you might call a career entrepreneur. So I've never actually really worked for anyone else my entire life. And when you are given that career path, it sort of makes you hustle like no other and makes you figure out ways to get ahead and kind of shortcut your success in a lot of ways, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But you probably hear from my accent that I'm originally Australian. I moved to Los Angeles in California 5 years ago now, and we love it here. Half of my kids have American accents and the other half have Australian accents. That's kind of cute. But really my story goes that I went to university for 6 months and I dropped out. So I can proudly say now that I'm a college dropout. It just wasn't going fast enough for me. You know, I'm one of those people that likes to roll their sleeves up and, you know, get amongst it and ask lots of questions and be curious. And so I dropped out of uni. I met someone out socially soon after that, and she had started a little staffing agency, a little recruitment company, if you will. Went to work with her. After literally a couple of weeks after starting there, her and her business partner parted ways, you know, very amicably. Yeah. But as he was walking out the door, he turned around and said to her, "If you're going to offer equity to anyone in this little business, you'd offer it to that kid sitting over there." And he pointed at me. So that's kind of how I got my start in small business 100 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I was in that business for 7 years. And we did really, really well. You know, we started off from a baseline revenue of zero, and we built it to a company of like 45 people. We won a host of awards. You know, it was a really, really great foundational start for me in terms of customer service and building culture and managing teams and leadership. And, you know, I really got my hands dirty across every single element of the business. After about 7 years, I had the entrepreneurial itch. You know, I decided to think about, you know, what's next? Is this all there is for me? Is there anything else out there? And it was about that time that a girlfriend invited me along to a Business Chicks event. And I said, "Oh, no way. I'm not doing that. That's a terrible company name. I'm a feminist. I'm a serious entrepreneur. I'm not going to anything that calls themselves chicks," right? You know, it's insulting and blah, blah, blah. And she said, "Listen, shut up and just come along and experience this thing with me." And I walked to that first Business Chicks event and it just took my breath away. It was so incredibly beautiful. The music was pumping, people were high-fiving and hugging, and it was just like, you know, a rock concert meets a boardroom meeting or something. I don't know. It was just like the sisterhood on steroids and really high energy. And I was like, this is amazing. And how I had built my first business was through networking, putting myself out there and meeting as many people as possible. So for me not to have known about Business Chicks was, you know, quite the revelation. So went back to my recruitment company, passed around my credit card, said to everyone, let's all become members here. Let's buy some tables at the next event. Did that, fast forward a couple of months, was at the Business Chicks event and I heard the business was for sale. So I put up my hand and I ran up to the lady at the end and I said, listen, I've never run an event before in my life. I don't know how to run a membership organization, but I just feel drawn to this opportunity and can we talk? So started talking, ended up buying the business 6 months later. I was 25 at the time. We started off with 200 members and we now reach over 500,000 women across the globe. So it's been an extraordinary ride of 15 years building this business into the organization it is today. And that's a little bit about my backstory.
Oh my goodness, that's so incredible.
I spoke really fast. Sorry.
No, that's great. And I will tell you too, it's funny how you cannot have heard of somebody or heard of an organization. Like I'm sure somebody listening is like, right, Business Chicks. I don't know what
never
this
heard
is.
Of it. Yeah.
And then you say 500,000, you know, people following and engaging and coming to your events. And right, it's incredible what you've built. And I just love hearing that story. Now I'd love to ask you, when you raised your hand and said like, let's talk, I'm interested.
Yeah.
Was that like, was she sold? Did she know you were the girl or did it take a little bit to convince her?
It definitely did take some convincing. So I think there are 11 or 12 parties who are interested in purchasing the rights to the business. And, you know, in comes me who says I have no experience. And, but you know, I think the lesson here, Stacey, is like enthusiasm. Yeah. People love enthusiastic people, you know, and people love authentic people and people can smell BS a mile off, you know? And so I was very honest with her. I was very open. I was very excitable. I was very enthusiastic. And I think that's what we lack in the world sometimes, you know, people who are really willing to put in the work, be enthusiastic, be genuine. And I think that's what, you know, convinced her all those years back that I was the right person to take it on.
Well, and I'm sure she's looking back at the decision thinking, I definitely made the right one. So that's incredible what you've done with it. Now, you talk about in the book, and oh my goodness, let me just tell you right now, the book was incredible. I read it, a very quick read for me. I read it in a weekend. Lots of really cool things that I want to share with you guys today. So I'm so glad we get the chance to talk, but you talked about in the book, the importance of soft versus hard skills. Can we talk about like what that looks like, what you look for when you're hiring your team and bringing on and adding to your dream team?
Yeah, I love it. It's a great question. And people and culture is something that I'm super, super pumped about. And it's definitely been the way I've been able to build my businesses up until this point. You know, my first ever hire in my current business was a girl called Amber. She's still with me 15 years on. My CEO in my business started with me in my first company, did 3 or 4 years there, left, then came across to Business Chicks, worked with me for another 3 or 4 years there. Then she left and she came back and now she's in the CEO role. So I think those two stories tell you something about the type of culture that we build in our businesses and what we do for people and vice versa. So soft versus hard skills. I mean, listen, my business is not cardiothoracic surgery. It's not, you know, I don't hire any astrophysicists. So really what I need in my companies, which are, you know, it's building community. We make money off of our live events and our membership model. So it's, you know, it definitely needs people who can live and breathe the brand. It needs people who have wonderful attitudes and have, you know, a believe it's possible attitude to everything and their approach to their own work. So really for me, I've always had a belief that I can train almost anyone in any, you know, hard skills required in my companies. And what I'm always out there looking for is people who do have the right attitude and they do have, you know, I call them, I think I wrote this in the book, you know, I call them sunshiny people, you know, when they walk in the room, they lift the energy and you kind of, you're drawn to them and you want to hang around and they leave you better than when they first started, right? Yeah. So for me, those sort of people are absolute gold in my business. So I'm always looking, I'm always, always, always looking for talent, right? And I try and look at the talent pipeline in the same way as a sales pipeline. You should always be looking for great people to join your business. And that's not to say you'll ever have an opening in the next year or two. You know, I'm always looking. I know there are people out there that I've started building relationships with that I won't hire for probably the next 4 or 5 years, but in 4 or 5 years, an opportunity might come up and, you know, they're the right person for the gig. So I love, and I think I talk about it in the book, I love what Dr. Lois Frankel says about this. And she says, you know, when you need a relationship, it's too late to build one. So we should always be building our relationships, always be looking for talent, always be looking for, you know, who the next hire is. And for me, it always circles back to this idea of happy, positive people who are, you know, radically optimistic about life. And, you know, our leaders and our managers can train on the stuff that they don't have experience in. It's, you know, I can't train, you know, someone to be happy and try and see the best in situations. That sort of stuff is, yeah, like I said, just gold.
Yeah. And I love that quote about it. When you need it, it's too late to build one, because how many of us open our DMs, right? And the people there that need us, they have built no relationship. They need us now. They want us to do something today. And we just are turned off.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really great point you make. We should be always, always, always investing in our outreach, in our networking, in our relationships. And, you know, I saw it with COVID, you know, when COVID hit and our revenues were decimated, you know, through live events. We do about 110 live events with past speakers like Richard Branson, Sarah Jessica Parker, Brene Brown, Gloria Steinem, Ariana Huffington, the list goes on and on and on. You know, we were suddenly thrust into a situation where we can't have any of those gatherings anymore, right? Okay. So we had to pivot to digital delivery. And, you know, the revenues just are not there to be able to offer the same fees that we used to be able to. So I had to call in all these relationships and had to call in all these favors from people with whom I had been building relationships for the past decade. So of course they're going to say, you know, I trust you. You know, you're a credible person to me. You're a trusted advisor, all this sort of stuff. Yes, I'm happy to do you a favor. But again, that's 10 years of relationship building there and building that trust. So yeah, it's a great point.
Well, and there's people that were in your situation that had, you know, the same situation happened that had not been building relationships.
Exactly.
And they're probably not getting responded to, hearing lots of no's. So it's a pretty big valuable lesson to take away for sure.
Yeah, I love it.
Now, one thing you had said in the book, and this was, I will remember this every time I hire, you had talked about when you bring on a new person, you ask yourself, will this person increase the average of the team or decrease the average? And I was like, oh, Emma, like so, so good. Because I think sometimes we want to just get the person who's maybe lower salary, right? Lower level, like you're trying to save money. And to say to yourself, what is this going to do to the team? Yeah. Because I think when you are talking about the sunshiny person, we want to work with not just people that are pleasant and nice to get around, but we want to work with the go-getters, right? When your team is driven, they want to work with people that are driven as well. So what is that going to do? And how are they going to either bring you up or pull you down?
Yeah.
Have you ever had an experience where you didn't intentionally bring on somebody that decreased the average, but you could tell right away? Have you noticed anything like that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an amazing question. And I've been building businesses for over 20 years now. So it would be an absolute lie if I told you that I hadn't had people challenges and gotten hires wrong, you know. And for me, you know, I suppose the counsel or the advice that I always take is to try and hire slow and fire fast, right? And that's to say that if you, and thank you for bringing that up, because I do always try and set the, you know, the culture of my business or the average here. And I'm looking to be nudged up all the time, like not to be brought down. But yeah, of course I've had people who I thought were going to make a great fit and have turned out to be, you know, not right fits, if you like, or worse still, really bad apples for culture, you know. And I think I talk about this in the book as well. You know, it's like sometimes the people who are the most phenomenal performers for you in terms of they might bill the most or, you know, add the most in some other way can be the worst for culture. And I've certainly had experiences like that where I've had to sit down and have very tough conversations, and I've had to you know, lay people off if they haven't you know, done great things for our culture or haven't gotten along with other people. So, you know, I see it as my responsibility as a leader of a business to protect the culture at all times. And even though you might have someone who is, you know, billing the most and or growing your business, you know, if they're making it a miserable experience for everyone else and the time's up, you've got to make that call. And you know, it's really true. Like, leadership is not for everyone. It's a very, very difficult position, and we are called to have those tough conversations. And I've certainly had to many, many, many times, you know. But I think circling back to your point about culture is not just about having a bunch of nice people, you know, walking around to giving each other hugs and, you know, singing Kumbaya. It's not, you know, we are there. Business is here to serve its people, to serve its shareholders, to serve the communities in which we operate. Absolutely. You know, but first and foremost, you should run a healthy, profitable business and, you know, not put up with people that, you know, destroy culture. It's just not worth it. So that's the job of a leader to make sure that happens.
Yeah. And it's a big responsibility that we take as the CEO and as somebody who has to, you know, especially depending on how big everybody's teams are. Are we still in that role of hiring? Do we have other people hiring? Have we passed down what we're looking for? And, you know, I'm training other people as they interview what we look for, what we don't want. Here are red flags. Here are questions to ask.
Yes.
And I think there's pros and cons. You know, you might find the amazing driven person with the bad attitude, or just the genuinely nice person that you are excited to work with, but yet the drive isn't there, or that lack of attention to detail and things like that. Just hard conversations.
Absolutely. I think what's really helped us in our business's maturity, we did this several years ago now, but it's having a set of core values that drive the business, right? And these core values become like a North Star that everyone needs to follow, right? And I can tell you at any given moment when we're off of our values, you know, when wrong decisions get made, whether it be on hiring decisions, whether it be on strategic direction or whatever the decision is. Yeah. And I can tell you it's because we haven't kind of come back to center and looked at those core values. So, you know, anyone who's listening to this, you know, you might think it sounds like a little bit of woo-woo, but it is honestly really, really useful for you to sit down and define those core values, you know, and there's a million different templates on the web that you can look at to find those. But I just know that's been really, really useful for us to get those, you know, for us, it's six core values out and, you know, have them dictate hiring decisions and other decisions you need to make in your business.
Yeah, that's so, I was so glad you said that, because I do think people hear like, oh, we need values. And then they hurry and Google on the internet and then they grab and steal somebody else Zappos values. And that's not what this is, right? So when I'm not happy with somebody on the team, or like you said, a decision you've made or things like that, I'll go back and I'll say, where did we go wrong? Or what is this person lacking? Maybe they're driven, their quality of work is amazing, but they are not a team player, right? Or they're not resourceful. They're always getting somebody else to try to like kind of do their dirty work, whatever it is. But it's usually always something goes back to one of our company values is just not in alignment. So it really does need to mean something to you when you pick them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can take years to formulate. You know, it's not as if you, sometimes companies I see, they get in a boardroom and like, we'll get them out this afternoon. And it's like, you know, like we had to really kind of sit in ours for a while before they got so solidified and so clear. And now they're succinct and we know them and we can, you know, it's, you know, they're spot on for us. But I would say don't rush that process. Don't think you're going to get it out with a strategic consultant, in like a management consultant in half a day, you know, really sit with them. And you've got to let the shared experience and the corporate DNA of your business really build before you can get clear on, you know. And it's just another way of saying, you know, the way we do things around here, right? It's another sort of definition of your culture, and your business's culture is going to be different to mine, and my company values are going to be different. So yeah, don't go and steal Zappos or Amazon. Look within and make your own.
They say that employees, they want to know what's expected of them. So when we share our company values, it's another way of saying, you know, this is what we expect of you and this is what you'll be evaluated on. So they love knowing that. And you're right. We actually had four company values for probably, I would say at least a good year. Like these were those four company values. And then we threw in a fifth one because we realized this is not mentioned anywhere in here. And it really bothers us when people aren't fulfilling that need. And like you said, sit with it because they evolve for sure.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Great.
So in the book, you talk about focusing on the wrong things. And you say this phrase, I'm going to read this, don't rush to the urgent at the expense of important. And I love that. So with COVID and the global pandemic, do you think people are getting better at their focus? Are we getting worse with maybe homeschooling and you know, just things that have come our way? What have you noticed or seen with your community?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a big question, right? And I've seen such a breadth of diversity when it comes to how people are showing up and experiencing this year. You know, I mean, for me, it's been this kind of weird dichotomy of emotions, right? On one hand, it's been a beautiful recalibration of what's important and being able to not travel. Because like, you know, I live in LA, the majority of my business in Australia, I'm on a plane, you know, six or seven times back to Australia, which is, you know, excruciatingly difficult on not only my adrenal glands, but, you know, on my young family. I have six children under the age of 11. So it's a lot for me to be on planes. And even when I'm not traveling internationally, I'm traveling, you know, around the States for speaking gigs or whatever I have to do. So, you know, on one hand, this year has been a beautiful kind of return, you know, from a personal sense to family and what's important. And in my business, even though the business has been completely decimated in many areas, it has also been a terrific return to what it takes to be an entrepreneur and what it takes to be scrappy again. Because when your businesses get to a certain, you know, size or stage and you start to corporatize and put in layers of management, you know, it slows things down, right? And this year has forced all of us into innovation and speed, you know, simply to survive, right? And yeah. trying to figure out how we're going to make up whatever we lost. So I'm not sure if I'm being clear on that, but, you know, from my yeah. point of view, there's been a lot of beauty in this year. But there's also been a lot of challenge and a lot of rethinking and a lot of unlearning and relearning, if you like. So
yeah.
I think the point you make about the homeschooling is a terrific one. I mean, I think another thing that I'm grateful for is the fact that we're all sitting in each other's homes and we're able to, you know, I don't know, it's sort of democratizing in a way, you know, it's a really beautiful thing. I know I've got the kids. I mean, they hopefully won't come in this session, but you know, that they've walked in during podcasts and interviews, and right. you know, not normally, like people would say, like, oh, that's not professional. It's like right now, this is the new norm.
It is.
So I don't want to downplay or minimize the suffering of this year. It's been, you know.
No, I respect that. You're saying, like, there's been silver linings, but there's also been things, and I think it's just magnified some of the things that we didn't even realize were problems before, right? I mean, I have a few businesses, and the one is 18 years old. It was what I would call a well-oiled machine. And I got pulled back in a little bit because we are a physical location. Our doors were required to close for 2.5 months. Like, we had some challenges. Yeah. And I think for anybody to act like, oh, no big deal, you know, that's not the norm, right? But you are the same person. Like, and in fact, you've had even more experiences to help guide you to make those decisions. So you might be a little bit comfortable, and then all of a sudden it requires you to be a little more agile, a little more adaptive. It's keeping you on your toes, right? So
absolutely. No, and I would agree with that as well. I mean, you can, when your business gets to 15, 18, 20 years old, there can be some complacency that sinks in. You know, definitely been a reminder that, hang on a minute, like, nothing is a given.
Yeah.
All those customers that you've, you know, worked hard for and been serving, that they may no longer be there. So like it just has been, again, a return to kind of basics, you know, and how do we make money here and what levers need to be pulled in order to change things up. So there's a lot of learnings, let me tell you.
Yes, definitely. And one thing that you had brought up in the book was like learning to fall in love with your business finances. Yeah. And I will say, like, that is one thing that you cannot be too good at right now, especially during COVID. I mean, that's what keeps you open and alive and the business still running. What do you say to somebody that's like, but I'm not good at math. This isn't why I got into this. I don't want to do that. Like, what do you tell that person?
I tell that person, get out of business, because listen, it's you have to, when it comes to money and finances, you cannot stick your head in the sand. And that's not to say you need to be good at math. Like, I don't think I'm better with words and, you know, language rather than numbers. But that's to say that I have trained myself to know the right people to put around me. I've trained myself to know the right questions to ask when it comes to business finances. I've trained myself to understand the rigors of good financial management and, you know, what the rituals are. And for me, that just manifests in a few ways, right? So I check my cash position daily. I meet with my finance team weekly. It's not something that I absolutely love doing, and it doesn't like light me up, but I make myself do it because it's so important, you know. And when COVID hit, I assembled the finance team straight away and I said, give it to me straight. Like, how many months or years do we have of cash left? Like, if this is going to be the new norm for like the next 18 months, are we going to be still standing? Because we need to know this, right?
Right.
So that sort of, you know, that urgent immediate action got us all thinking, you know, and we had to make some pretty, you know, dramatic, you know, changes in the business. Unfortunately, we had to make some layoffs at the start, which is not fun for any leader to do. You know, we had to really rein in our expenses and just have an even deeper focus on our finances. So, you know, like I just would say, find what works for you, but do find something, just do not stick your head in the sand when it comes to money, you know, and again, try and hire the people around you that can continue that conversation and keep informing you and keep educating you. You know, I mean, for I know most of your audience are probably women, and for me, financial independence and financial literacy has been something that has been so important to me from an early age, you know, and I was not taught it. You know, I had a beautiful, beautiful childhood. My parents are amazing, amazing people, but they were not taught financial literacy, and they did not teach us financial literacy. So thank goodness I kind of, stumbled along, I suppose, the personal development and growth movement in my teenage years. And I was able to start the business at 18 and then buy my first property at 19 and go on and go on and go on. So I just think it's something that we all need to really focus on and find people around us that we can turn to ask questions and not be scared to ask silly questions. You know, I'm still the person in the room that's always like, I don't understand that. And, you know, then the answer comes back and everyone else writes it down. And I'm like, you didn't know it either. But, you know, I'm the one who put my hand up, right?
Right.
So I think being an entrepreneur and being a successful one takes a degree of, you know, swallowing your own pride and being the one to be the most curious and to ask the dumb questions. And I've seen that time and time again. And don't for a second think that all these people that we look up to have it all sorted, because, you know, I've seen them also ask the questions, right? So that's an important
thing. I don't think you need to feel shame around not knowing some of these things, right? I think it's just be open to what you don't know and really ask those good questions and start to take it in and start to learn. I will tell you that when I started to really look at my business finances, it was not a fun activity. The numbers were not good, but I don't think it's a coincidence that as I kept looking at it, they started to get better and better and better. And I think because of the work we did pre-COVID, we're in good shape now. So I really want you to understand that when you first start to look at it, there might be some
discomfort.
It's okay for that to happen, but you need to be measuring and tracking that information.
Yeah. And it's so true. Like what you focus on gets results, right? So if you're ignoring it, you're not going to get results in that area. So really try and take a deep breath and dive in. Like the sooner you know it, the better, right?
Yes. And one thing you brought up with laying off, I think a lot of times we can have this guilt or shame around like that being a negative thing, or thinking like, oh, but I let them down, or I did this, or we put a lot of this on ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things we talked about in the beginning of, there are going to be some tough conversations and some tough decisions you need to make. And it's not a weakness to lay people off. It's more of a weakness sometimes to lead people on and keep them there when you're draining the business and you're killing the business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No one enjoys it, but your role as a leader is to ensure the health and longevity of your business and the jobs of the people that the other people in the business. So
yes,
yeah, you've got to look at that as well. Don't stick your head in the sand when it comes to people.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to talk about, and I'm so happy that this was in the book, was acuity versus project income and how you wanted both. Can we talk about that a little bit? I think I attract, you know, two different types of people where, you know, sometimes people come in and they're in this launch strategy where they quick have these big projects that bring in money, but they're feast or famine mode sometimes. And those people really got hit hard during COVID. So yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. So when I first bought the Business Chicks business, I really interrogated the business model and saw that, you know, they were making money off of the events they were running. But like you said, it was feast or famine. So we'd have an event, woohoo, make some money. And then like no one would eat for the next 3 months in a little event. And I was like, this is not a business model. And you're like, we are, you know, it's just, I can't afford to employ anyone, let alone pay myself on this model. Right. So I started to think about how else we could commercialize the offering and how else we could build in multiple revenue streams, right? And I know we're talking about business finances here, but this goes for personal finances as well. And it's been said that on average, millionaires have 7 different income streams. So it's really, really important to kind of think about that and noodle the idea of how else can we kind of dial this up and think differently about it. So for me, that looked like obviously introducing a paid subscription model in the memberships that we sell. It looked like going after a sponsorship model. So we have hundreds of companies that partner with us to sponsor our activities. And it also, as time went on, looked like productizing in other areas. So we have a digital media business where we profile members and tell stories and have a digital magazine and all that sort of stuff. So I suppose the point here is the diversity is key, right? You want to have, I mean, every business model is very, very different, right? But for us, the project income of, having a big conference or having a big event or having a big leadership gathering or a big sponsorship, that's great. And that really bolsters up the finances. But what revenue stream can we have that when I'm sleeping at night, I know someone is taking over and someone is buying. So for us, that's definitely the membership model and it's worked really, really beautifully. And again, I can't provide advice on what your business is or your audience's business, but it's just the thinking of that, right? It's like,
right.
trying to figure out how else could I feasibly commercialize this or make money off of this that is going to almost run itself. And you know, I think it's worth sitting in that. It's worth sitting in the discomfort of not knowing and strategizing with someone around, how you can bring those other revenue streams in.
Right. Well, diversity is so key. And there are many of us that realize with this pandemic that we were a little bit too much of eggs in one basket, right? We are now scrambling to diversify in other ways to make us more secure. And it's only going to make us stronger, right? We're only going to be better next time. So I think that was a pretty big wake-up call to see. You know, we had people that didn't have people on reoccurring revenue. It was just they showed up at their business, gave them their credit card. Yes. Those people got hit the hardest because they had nobody coming in immediately when their doors were closed versus some people having more of the membership type model, subscription model. So definitely, like I said, a big wake up call, and there's no shame. It's just learn the lesson, get better, get stronger, and start to diversify that brand.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Great advice.
Now, okay, last question. I know I said that was my last question, but you talked about being ultra organized. And as a mom of six, there's just no way to not have organization in your life. And I am such a systems girl. Like I'm like, oh, okay, good. That makes me feel good that she's doing this and she's organized. Any good tips for us? Because a lot of my listeners are also systems people. Any good tips or ways to systematize the house, the family, the business? Anything that's your go-to.
Yeah. I mean, listen, my big tip is getting the right people around you, both in your business and your home life. And I run my business like a business, you know, because I have six little kids under the age of 11 with six different schedules and, you know, the schooling and the activities, not that we have many activities right now, but so it's always been to have good people around me and to have systems. So, you know, I write about it in the book. I make sure the lunch boxes are in age order. Night on the kitchen counter. Like I have stations all around the house because we spend so much time looking for stuff. You know, where are the scissors? Where is the hairbrush? So I have little stations set up all around the house. You know, I am always trying to multitask as best as I can. So I know the science says we shouldn't multitask, but when it comes to being, you know, at home, I'm always, you know, braiding someone's hair whilst looking for a Halloween costume, whilst, you know, doing tutoring for my 11-year-old social studies project. So I think those things, but I mean, I think more than anything, and you will get this from all the businesses that you run and have built over the years, you know, everything circles back to mindset, right? So, you know, I've had a coach in my life for the last 20 years, and every single time I think I'm coming to her with a business problem that I want to solve, it always unravels. And it turns out that it's some self-limiting belief that I'm, you know, stuck with that's, you know, showing up in my business. So I think that goes for your personal life as well, having the right mindset and trying to have a calmness in the chaos. And I'm not sure if it's the Australian in me, but I do try and have a level of zen when it comes to our very busy household. But also I have this mantra that I say to myself as a parent, and it's, you know, you're doing your best. I say that to myself, honestly, 3 to 5 times a day, like you're doing your best, you're doing your best, you're doing your best, you know, because we, like in business, we shoot for this unrealistic, unattainable goal of perfectionism, and it is not, it's not reachable for any of us, right? So yes, I systemize my whole house. Yes, I run it like a business. Yes, I'm ultra organized. Yes, the wheels fall off all the time, every day. But the thing that I am good at is setting the right mindset and, you know, knowing that this is a moment in time and these times will pass. And I'm doing my best and I'm just trying to be a little bit kinder to myself in every single moment. So,
I think that's when we can all steal and borrow from you, whether it's being a mom or being in business, right? Like now you have to just keep reminding yourself, you are doing your best. You've never gone through a pandemic before. You've never experienced the things that are coming our way. Maybe some of you are with your kids at home still on top of that and running a business. So give yourself a little bit more grace, a little less guilt.
Yeah, a little pat on the back as well. Please. Gosh, a lot. This year is a lot.
So Emma, where can people go and find your book, find you on social, find more about Business Chicks? Fill us in.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Well, I am Emma Isaacs on social, so please give me a follow. You can buy the book at any of the indie bookstores. You can buy it on Target, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. I'd really appreciate you go grab a copy. It's full of the 20 years business wisdom that I've had. I've got a copy.
It's jam-packed, you guys.
Loves it too. So go search up Amazon now. But Thank you, Stacey. It's been such a joy to talk to you.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. You guys definitely go check out Emma. Go check out her book, grab it. Like I said, really easy read. It's a good sized book, but I read it in a weekend, very easy. And you'll definitely get a few tips or two to start to implement. So Emma, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Hey, before you go, have you considered joining us in our next 30-day bootcamp? If you are loving the Foot Traffic Podcast, then you will love the Beginner Bootcamp, where we help you build your first marketing funnel in just 30 days, and it's only $97. Hurry and register at stacytushel.com/bootcamp to sign up for our next live bootcamp starting on the 1st.